Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 286, and it's proudly brought to you by our always-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, James Stacey. James, long weekend, we're back in the saddle.
We sure are, my man. We sure are. We're back, and it's a Tuesday morning. I can't say that I'm feeling especially sharp after a long weekend, but I did sleep all right, and I'm pretty excited about this episode. This is a kind of a random idea that I had while we were recording the previous episode. We're talking about Bond topics. So in today's episode, we're each going to be designing kind of the cast and some of the other Bond accoutrement for the next Bond film as a hypothetical.
Yeah.
I don't know what you've picked. You don't know what I've picked, and we're going to get to it in really just a moment. But I guess, you know, we are kind of kicking off every episode with a little bit of an update about Wind Up Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So for anybody who's interested in being at Wind Up Chicago with us, this will be, what, year three for us?
Yeah.
It's one of our favorite events of the year. A few things have changed, if you remember how it worked from last year. So Jason and I will be there Saturday and Sunday of the weekend for Wind Up Chicago. You can find all the details for this in the show notes or by visiting the Wind Up website. But for the TGN side of it, we'll be there for Friday, Saturday. The group dive, the Wind Up in the Lake, is going to be Saturday afternoon. So Jason will be busy with that. I will go to the show to make sure that we have some representation there. And then Sunday morning, we're going to do a little brunch Wind Up preview with the folks from Citizen. So not only will you get a bite to eat, but we'll also be able to sit down and chit-chat about a variety of topics and also get a chance to do a lap of the show without the huge crowds.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a nice offering from the folks at Wind Up and from Citizen. That's how that's going to work. We're going to have like exact timing and details and that sort of thing, but that'll be Sunday morning. We'll probably do some sort of programming Sunday afternoon, and then everybody can go back to their normal lives and, you know, look forward to next year's Wind Up. But I think that pretty much covers the plan. We'll have more news as it develops, but that's the kind of loose layout at the moment.
Yeah, I'm excited. We've every year seems to be a little bit different at Wind Up. First year we were selling merch at our table and just running around like chickens with our heads cut off, and then last year was a little more subdued. We spent more time at the Citizen booth and did another podcast record, and this year is going to be even more different.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, man, like I haven't been up to much. If I'm honest, like I've been a little lazy, got some work done last week. Then went to the cottage, put the new Starlink in. The one I got last year broke.
Oh, no.
It just wouldn't come online, and they were super cool about it and just sent another.
Huh. Wow.
Was not necessarily the customer service experience I was expecting. I think I expect the worst these days.
Yeah, right.
And I answered a few of their questions, like on text message on my phone.
Huh.
And they're like, yeah, something's wrong. We can't fix it, really. So just...
Huh.
We'll send you another one, and we'll send you a label, and you can send this one back. So that's what I've done.
Amazing.
And, man, I plugged this thing, and it was online in, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes.
Jeez.
So watched the Monaco F1 from the cabin, which is, it's a high-low scenario.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it was a good weekend. A nice jump off the dock and, you know, got to pull a bunch of stuff around the property with the Jeep and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
No real complaints. How about you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, mine was quiet as well. Gashani was actually out of town, and so I was just being a bachelor here at home. I did a little gardening. I had visited my folks and got some plants from their garden and brought them here and planted them here, and then had a friend over for a meal one night, and kind of got caught up on a few things I had to get done when it was good and quiet here. And I did have an interesting development, though, if you'll recall. A friend of a friend back several months ago sourced or found that Breitling Navitimer at a thrift shop in this small town down in Iowa. And he, this guy's a magician. He wrote me a couple days ago and he said, I found another interesting watch that you might be keen on. And he sent me some pictures, and it is far as I can tell from some research, it's a watch from the late 1700s, which is incredibly old. It says Rose and Son, London. So presumably a old British pocket watch in a very dented, kind of beat up, I think it's a brass case. You know, took the back off, kind of did some looking around. It's one of these kind of double cases where you hinge open the case and then the watch actually comes out of the case. And then you can open that up both sides to set the hands or to look at the movement. There's a few watchmaker marks scratched on the inside of the case. And then inside the outer case, there were these folded round cut pieces of paper that were like stuffed in there as padding. And it had like this image of a paddle wheel boat. And then as I was peeling away these different sheets of paper, it was like cut out circles of what looked like a German newspaper. It was in this old German script font, you know, German language, kind of stuffed in the case. And, you know, who better to ask about this watch than our TGN alum, Dr. Rebecca Struthers over in the UK, who happens to be the foremost authority on antique watch restoration over there. So I sent her a couple of pictures and she gave me a little bit of feedback and asked me to look for a few things. And we've been kind of going back and forth on it. So, it's just a fascinating find. I've got a fondness for pocket watches. I don't collect them. I have both of my grandfather's old Hamiltons, but this just seemed like such a fascinating, very old piece. I mean, something from the 1700s. I mean, there's almost, you almost find nothing from that era of any sort. And so it's a key winding watch. So it doesn't actually wind with the stem. It was before those days. And so I've sourced a set of pocket watch winding keys on Amazon, and those will be coming in the next day or two. So I can actually see if this thing actually holds a wind or if the mainspring just explodes and, you know, takes out my eye or something.
Sure.
So Gashani brought it back with her from her visit down to Iowa over the weekend. And I've been kind of looking at it through a loop and gingerly taking it apart here at my desk. And it's really, really cool.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Very cool. Can't wait to hear how that develops as you learn a little bit more about it. I love that you can get vintage pocket watch winding keys on Amazon.
Yep, there's no end.
What a world, yeah, eh? What a I world. Well, very yeah, cool. That's great. Yeah. And do you have any photos of that on the Instagram? I took the weekend off from social media.
I just
media,
put so some up this morning. And it's gotten some interesting comments, and Dr. Struthers commented on it. And we've been kind of going back and forth. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'll be sure to put that in the show notes if people would like to check it out, or swing by Jason's Instagram for the direct link.
Yeah.
But you want to jump into some wrist check?
Yeah, let's do it. I've actually got the that Breitling Navitimer on my wrist. I pulled it out over the weekend. Nice. When the pocket watch arrived, just as kind of an homage to that, wearing something old and interesting. And I've got that. It's been a very rainy couple of days here, so I'm not stepping out of the house with it on my wrist because it even knew that watch had no water resistance at all. So that will stay safely either under my cuff or in a box here in my office. But that's what I've got at the moment. How about you?
Nice. I'm actually wearing my Aqualand. I put it on Friday to take it up to the cottage. You know, he's going to be jumping in the dock and cutting grass. It's just like it's just such a toolish thing. So that's the JP 2007 17W. It's the Loom dial. Quickly becoming, I think, my favorite Citizen of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least in my top three. It's on the Mount Rushmore, the Citizen Mount Rushmore for sure, with its glowing face and its weird dark dial or dark case. Yeah. You know, and I've got it on like a $12 strap from Amazon. I think I gave you one.
Yeah.
Of the same strap, this sort of sandy two-piece, you know,
so good.
NATO style.
It's really, really good. Yeah.
Way better than this strap should be for the $12, yeah, even including a black plated buckle.
Yeah.
But I wore this all weekend. It's easily the biggest watch that I can sleep with. It's just so comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't take it off. The Loom is strong enough in contrast that you can read it in the middle of the night without like toasting your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I really like having the anti-digi functions for timing stuff and that sort of thing. Cause you know, you're always doing three or four things at the cottage and one of them is usually in the oven and about to burn if you're me. So it's helpful to have the chronograph and that kind of thing. I just absolutely love this watch. It's great.
Yeah. And speaking of that strap, before I put the Breitling on, I was wearing my, I've got this vintage Aqualand from the mid 80s with the steel case. And I put that on that strap and that's how I've been wearing it. And I've got it on my desk next to me here and it just looks so good. It always bothers me when the buckle material or color is different than the case of the watch. And that is a slight niggle for me because it's a black buckle with a steel case watch. But, you know, I'll get over it. But I was wondering, I was going to ask you, actually, if that strap came in other sizes and other buckle materials. Do you remember?
I don't know offhand, but what I will do is I'll go back through my Amazon. It may be an Amazon.ca thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'll double check. If I can find the .com, I'll put it in the show notes as well. But I'll find the link to this, to a version of this. My guess is it's also the kind of thing that, like, a little bit of hunting on Temu or Alibaba, it's probably more like $2 or $3, but you have to buy 50 of them or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's definitely not a high quality product, but it suits the watch really well.
Yeah.
And it's good enough,
yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. It's not. It's soft. It's pliable. It's very simple. It came. Mine. I think. I bought two of the same. So you had the same. It even came with like quick release spring bars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't trust those. I didn't like the feel of them, and they kind of clicked around inside the lug.
Yeah.
So I tore those out and put in like more burly bars. But nice little strap for the money. I'll dig up some reference of it and put it in the show notes for people to check out. If you have a watch that needs a 24. Millimeter strap,
yeah.
That doesn't add any bulk. Like I don't know that this is necessarily the sort of watch I would put on a NATO, just because it wears in such a specific way on your wrist that lifting it up would change that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this gives you the gray tan sort of NATO vibe, but with zero bulk.
Right.
It's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And inexpensive. Yeah, I have no complaints about this watch. Yeah. Great product. Yeah. Fun stuff.
Good stuff, yeah. And it's, I believe it's an anniversary of ProMaster, so we'll see what they come up with at probably a wind-up. That'll be fun. Fun to see.
Yeah, wind-up in towards the gift-giving season, as they call it.
Yeah.
But hey, how about we jump into some Bond?
Yeah, I think so. Cue the music, right? I mean, this is...
Yeah, exactly. We legally can't use the music.
Yeah.
I was going to write a whole intro
based
on lyrics from Bond songs, but admittedly, I got bored after about three sentences, so this is not the end. You need not hold your breath nor count to 10. If you missed the last episode, which, to be fair, was a very long episode, so some of you might have to do it in multiple chunks, that sort of thing, with Richie Kohler, we were talking about the possibility of coming up with our own Bond, kind of the layout of the structure of a Bond film. So we're going to leave plot out of this. If you have plot ideas, Jason, by all means, share them. I have ideas, but I don't have like a full storyline.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're talking about who would we want to play Bond, the Bond girl, the villain, the henchman, Q, M, who maybe directed, cinematography, theme song, cars, gadgets, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to fill in those blanks as we go and each kind of design our idea of what could kind of be the next Bond film. This is Bond 26 that's coming up. They haven't officially announced who will be playing Bond, so I did want to get in before that. To be fair, like, they could announce Aaron Taylor Johnson or whoever before this episode comes out. It could happen tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that there was a huge lead up to, you know, the big Thames boat ride with Daniel Craig back, I don't even know how many years ago. Do you remember that when that would have been?
It would have been 20 years
when
ago.
They announced Craig?
04 or
yeah,
05.
About that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess the easiest place to start would be who's going to play Bond.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But maybe to do that, you might want to explain, and I'll let you go first, if you'd like.
Sure.
I think if we're going to start with who's playing Bond, we also have to kind of explain what sort of Bond film this will be.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's been, six or seven Bonds,
mm-hmm.
and they all bring a certain thing of their own to the world.
Yeah.
Maybe Craig was considered the dark Bond because that was the era of films that it was made as well. I don't know that it was like he was intentionally set to be the dark Bond. And you had kind of, there was goofy elements to some of them, and there were some that were more serious and that sort of thing. So I'm keen to hear who you've got. If you want to kick it off, please feel free.
Yeah. So I've had this kind of feeling since, you know, Craig did his swan song and went off stage, that, you know, they're going to have to reboot the series with a new actor and probably a bunch of new actors. And so I thought this seems like it would be a prime time for them to not only reboot the kind of the Bond franchise with this movie, but to kind of do it in a way that goes back to the beginning. They've never really done a throwback kind of, what would you call it? Like setting it at a different era. And I think,
A period piece, Bond.
Period piece. Exactly. And
yeah,
I think,
okay.
You know, Bond, Fleming was writing these books starting in 53. So, you know, a lot of his stuff is set in the mid 50s. And I'd love to see Bond 26 pick up things like at the beginning. You know, Casino Royale arguably was a reboot. It was the introduction of Daniel Craig as a new 007. And in this case, I would like to see it set in the late 50s, like during the era in which Fleming was writing these books. And so that's where I want my film to be set and kind of carry on from there. And I think I've got two actors in mind for Bond. I'm going to give you my A actor, and I'll wait to hear your choice before I introduce kind of my second option. But the guy that I've really kind of earmarked for the role is, I believe he's a British actor, possibly Irish, given his name, Jack O'Connell. So Jack O'Connell he's been in a number of films, but most recently I saw him in the series SAS Rogue Heroes, which was based on a really great book and loosely based on the history of the formation of the SAS during kind of the Desert War of World War II. And O'Connell plays Paddy Mayne, who is foremost, one of the great kind of heroes of SAS history. And he's just so convincing in the role. He has a certain menace to him. Mm-hmm. He has the looks. I think a lot of people focus on the looks of Bond. I don't necessarily think that he has to be, an Adonis necessarily. I think O'Connell definitely has a kind of a brooding hero look about him. But I think if you watch him in any of his roles, I think you'll get the vibe that I think he would make a good Bond. And I think he's been talked about as a possibility for the role.
I believe he has, yeah.
So he's my first choice, just based on a few actors. You mentioned Aaron Taylor Johnson, and I think, he's been kind of earmarked as a front runner, and I kind of avoided him. I don't see him in that role. I'll wait to hear what you think, but I just feel like I prefer O'Connell, and I think he's my number one choice. So that's where I'm going at this point. So kind of a reboot set in the late 50s, period piece with Jack O'Connell as Bond is where I'm starting things off here.
Do you have a title for yours?
I do, yeah. My working title is Dead Reckoning.
Oh. Will it have actual sailing in it, unlike Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm thinking it'll have some kind of a nautical element to it, whether, Bond is a former Navy man, so I think it would kind of make sense. But that's as far as I've gotten in terms of a plot. It will have nautical elements, but titled Dead Reckoning, set in the late 50s.
Okay, I love this. This is really cool.
Yeah,
very different than the direction I'm going.
All right. You're going on outer space?
I'm not going in outer space. No, I have a loose plot which we can get into if we want to. I just don't know that it's specifically important.
Yeah,
but I'm going to start with the title of mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's called "There's Nothing at the End."
Oh, nice. That's very Bondish. Yeah.
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 I did find, we can maybe end on this if we remember. I did find a random generator of Bond titles.
Oh, wow.
This, to be fair, There's Nothing at the End I already had. I just think it's a cool.
That is cool.
Name and kind of fun.
Yeah.
But there's a really, it's this James Bond title generator, and they're really funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's very silly. It's clearly just pulling from a selection of words and fitting in it like a so we can roll the dice on a few of those towards the end of the show if we want.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, it's called There's Nothing at the End. This is going to be a very, very modern Bond. And I think the main goal in my mind is to appeal to a group of people who don't even remember where Daniel Craig came from because they're too young.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we remember Layer Cake.
Sure.
I'm probably on the younger side of people who were obsessed with Layer Cake.
Yeah, yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah.
I've outlined an entire plan here that I think will largely hinge on picking personalities that I do think would work really well, but will paint a very, very different Bond picture for probably a younger audience. And a lot of this has, I would say, like millennial references kind of painted throughout it.
Mm-hmm.
So my actual Bond choice, I have to give the hat tip to my wife, Sarah, because we had one name, and we can get into alts after this if we want, because it's a fun conversation while we're still on Bond before we move on. But I'm going with Daniel Kaluuya, who I just didn't realize was British.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he would have been like very early in the running for me. I absolutely love every time I see this guy on screen. He's menacing, but he has this kindness that isn't common to Bond.
Oh, that's a great choice.
And I genuinely believe Kaluuya is British. He is the right age, where he's not too young to be taken seriously, but not too old to not be able to do the physicality of the job.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know him as an action star, but I don't think that's as big a hurdle as it used to be, because you don't need to be 5'7" and 300 pounds of muscle to be an action star anymore. They can make it happen for just like they made it happen for friggin' Keanu Reeves twice over in his career, at least twice. Call it three times if we go into four times. And like, he's not the most likely guy to be an action star. So I think, yeah, it's Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah.
And I would just be so pumped to see him as Bond.
Yeah, great choice. That, I love it. I love it. Yeah, he wasn't not even on my radar. And yeah, good call. Hat tip to Sarah there. That was a good one.
Yeah, she killed it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, yeah, I'm a huge fan of this guy. I think O'Connell's perfect. He was definitely in my 10 in the running. He's in, like, I think he makes the case for himself so quickly in...
Yeah.
SAS Rogue Heroes.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a menace. Like, there's something uncomfortable just under the surface, but he has it kind of under control.
Right.
Until he's being violent or drinking or you know, putting all of those together, and you get this wildness that I really like.
Did you have a second choice? I'm sure
I did. So B choice was the one that he's been my number one for a very long time. And I think he would be a safer pick than Kaluuya. It helps that he's a white guy, right? Mm-hmm. In the Bond lineage. Robert Pattinson.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I could see that.
You go back and watch Tenet, where he plays Neil. Neil, for me, is just a Bond. He's a 00.
Yeah.
He's 38.
Yeah.
So by the time you made the first film, he would be into his 40s. But he's crazy famous with a huge group of people who probably don't watch Bond films that often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Which I think could be hugely valuable.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, he's British. He's handsome. He has done some background in, you know, action style films.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So it wouldn't be like a brand new genre to try and make the move. But he was the other that was high on the list. But came down to three that we argued about for some time between Kaluuya, Pattinson, and Dev Patel.
Oh.
I still think Dev Patel would be an incredible Bond.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like that. I like all three, actually. Yeah. Pattinson
and he's in his early 30s. He's 34. He just did Monkey Man.
Yeah.
He can do an action role. Mm-hmm. He's obviously handsome and imposing and everything you kind of want from a Bond.
Yeah.
I think he'd be incredible. I think it would be just a wildly cool Bond.
I agree. I think, you know, it raises the question that has come up several times, even during the making of No Time to Die, when it was revealed that there was a 007 who was a woman, a black woman in the movie, whether Bond needs to be white, male, British, etc. And, you know, I don't know where you come down on it, but I feel like Bond needs to be male, for one thing, just based on kind of the lineage of the story and the books and that sort of thing. Doesn't need to be white. I think he needs to be British. I think, you know, there was talk even back in the earliest days when they were looking for actors to play, even before they chose Connery, they had a couple of American actors in mind, which I'm really glad they haven't gone that route.
Of course, like Lazenby was Ford as James Bond.
Oh no, Lazenby was Australian, weird, but you know, close enough. With all apologies to Australians, I don't mean to insult you in that way, but yeah, definitely. I think does not have to be white. I think Kaluuya and Dev Patel would be spectacular choices. I think those are great.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think the race matters at all at this point. Like the ethnicity of Bond, I think he has to be demonstrably from England, and England has a very broad spectrum of skin tones and cultures represented in one place. So, you know, does it get much more multicultural than London? Probably not.
Yeah.
So none of that would bother me, but I do agree that while a 00 doesn't have to be a man, James Bond is a man.
Yeah.
So like, I think they can do exactly what they did with Lashana Lynch. I absolutely love her. She's in my film, no question.
Mm-hmm.
And she can be 00. That doesn't buy, like, who's 00 or what? Like, Bond gets 007 back towards the end of No Time to Die. And then, of course, there's an ending that makes that largely irrelevant.
Yeah.
But I have no problem with a 00 being a woman. It's just for that person, even for 007 to be a woman, like with Lashana Lynch, it just doesn't make sense for James Bond to suddenly be a woman.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like Kim Sherwood's books make that really clear that, you know, with Joanna and the rest of it, that you can go really far. It makes no difference what it's arguably it adds a really exciting dynamic to the story that has so far, at least in the past, largely been connected to, let's call it 24 of the 25 films. It's largely been connected to the idea that dynamic, the male-female dynamic, is between Bond and the Bond girl.
Right.
Whereas it is 2024, like, it could be between Bond and another 00.
Yeah.
With, you know, a different sort of power structure at play there, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would not bother me at all if they went really almost any direction with a Bond, as long as they went at it, like, in a way that felt intentional.
Right.
Those would be the three that leap for me. What were your alts beyond Jack?
I only had one alt, and that was Richard Madden.
Oh yeah,
you know he was good, and I've seen him in a few things, but he stood out in The Bodyguard. I think he plays kind of a Bond-esque character. I think he's kind of a former soldier, if not special forces, who you know is brought in to be the bodyguard to, I believe, the foreign minister, or maybe even the prime minister. I can't recall, but just a good role, you know, and I think he's got the physicality, the brooding looks. Of course, he was in Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, he's got it all.
I think he'd be good too. So that was my plan B.
And then just because we're pulling at threads and having a good time here, what does Aaron Taylor Johnson lack in what you're thinking for a Bond?
To be fair, I'm only basing that on, as I mentioned earlier, it you shouldn't focus solely on looks, and I can only base it solely on looks because I have not seen him in a movie. I know he was in that movie with, I believe, Brad Pitt. You'll remember
Bullet
the name.
Train.
Yeah, Bullet Train, which I haven't seen. I think I started it and I was like, eh, this isn't my thing. So I quit.
I couldn't see you loving Bullet Train. but Tenet, he's incredible.
Ah, right. Okay, he was in that. Yeah. I'll need to rewatch. I mean, I can see it. I can see it in the looks to a certain degree, but I don't know. I just, you know, in my mind, I think everybody has a kind of an ideal Bond. And I think like O'Connell and Madden kind of fit that look. And I think Kaluuya certainly does. I think Dev Patel would be an interesting choice. He wouldn't be top of my list, but I think Kaluuya is a spot on. And so that's where I'm at. What about you? Nice. What do you think of Aaron Taylor Johnson?
I think it could be really good. My thing is I have trouble even now. Like once you're Bond, that's how I kind of think of you.
Oh yeah.
And like, if I go back and watch the Thomas Crown Affair, I just see that as a Bond film.
Oh, sure.
To a certain extent. You know what I mean? Like, I just see, like, he is Bond. Like, Pierce Brosnan, doesn't matter what he does,
yep,
or Timothy Dalton. Doesn't matter what they do. I see them on screen, I see Bond.
Yeah, I know.
But there's always that first moment, like, that you know, the essentially for me, like, Daniel Craig, when he busts through the drywall in the parkour sequence in the opening of Casino Royale, that's the moment he became Bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's this guy you don't really know talking on watching a mongoose fight a snake and want to chase a bomb guy. And he goes through this whole thing. And for me, it's that sequence, that opening sequence, the first film is when you go like, oh, no, that we have Bond now.
And it's redefined. Like, this is a physical Bond. This is a, you know, man, a few words, like all action kind of Bond, less so like witty.
Go back and watch that sequence at the consulate where he finally he realizes he's in a corner and he grabs that guy and he shoots that tank and blow. It's so violent.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so callous the way that he moves through the world. Like he has said almost nothing.
Yeah.
And you know so much about his Bond in moments.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you put Brosnan in that same scene and told him to do the same thing, it wouldn't work.
You're right.
So you have to make the movie around the Bond. And I don't, my problem with Johnson is I can't see the Bond in him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not there, but like if you put him in a tuxedo, I don't think that gets him closer to being Bond.
Yeah.
And if you think of him at the end of Tenet, where they're destroying, taking the machine apart and making their little death pledge.
Mm.
That feels very Bond to me.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have he lacks, it's just like it's a haircut and beard thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they have to kind of give him the full Bond aesthetic and then maybe I would get it.
Yeah.
You know, and in Bullet Train, he's a little bit cleaned up, but he's got this kind of like wilder side, bright suits and like, in some ways further than from Bond. So I'm pretty excited if they go that route with him, because I think he can do it. But I'm excited about how surprising I'm going to find the first 5 minutes of the first film.
Yeah.
Like I'm just pumped for it.
Yeah. All right. I think a logical place to go here is to Bond's boss. Who do you have for M?
Okay. So M was a lot of talk in my home about the M choice.
Yeah.
And I settled on, Idris Elba.
Ah,
who I still think should have been Bond 15 years ago. First of all, I want to be clear. I'll also just keep Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
I just love him.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if we're allowing like carryovers because I think he's amazing. Yeah.
I think he's incredible. The only reason I picked an M was this idea of maybe starting like a clean slate.
Yeah.
But if we got to keep him and that was the continuity between one generation of Bond to the next, fine by me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want a handsome, dashing, kind of daring guy who can stand up super straight like Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
And can if you give him a gun, can shoot it without looking like a knucklehead and the rest of it.
Yeah.
Like Idris Elba. I just love the guy.
I think it would be an interesting hat tip too, because I think Elba was a lot of people's choice for Bond for many years.
Totally.
And then, like to put him in the M role, I think would, it's like M used to be, you know, like it's kind of a guy who moved up in the ranks from being the guy who pulls the trigger to the guy who makes the decisions. And
totally.
I think he would carry that off convincingly.
Yeah. And I think like if you ended up finding out they tease out that he was a 00 at one point.
Yeah.
The new M,
yeah,
you know, used to be in the program and that kind of, like, you could make, and then you could give an excuse for an action sequence with him in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's other guys I could list, but we don't have the option. I still think it would have been absolutely incredible to have had Sean Connery as M.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I just think it would have been so cool.
Yeah.
Especially with a new young Bond.
Yeah.
And suddenly you have the first Bond is now the boss.
Yeah.
I think that kind of stuff would be really fun. But in my mind, like, it very quickly went to, like, obviously, I think that needs to be British.
Mm-hmm.
We've had men and women play the role in the recent films.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going clean slate, Idris Elba would be pretty high on the list. But, man, like... Like, I could do that. Mark Strong.
Yeah.
Like, I could do this for about 45. There's so many good British actors that can just be, like, kind of imposing and imperious,
mm-hmm.
but have the warmth that M is required to kind of balance out how murderous Bond can be.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the last few films, they really leaned on Moneypenny for that warmth,
mm-hmm.
And less so M. I really liked the prickly relationship that Craig had with Judi Dench's M.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the direction I'll go. I think it'd just be super fun to see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you? Who's your M?
Dominic West.
Oh, great call. Great call.
Dominic West.
He's probably just barely the right age too. So he wouldn't be too old after four films.
Yeah. I'm mesmerized by that guy when I see him in anything. I mean, he's of course he was in The Wire. That was like his big breakthrough.
Yep.
Like, he plays an American cop in Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, and he did it with Idris Elba.
And that, yeah, exactly. And then he was in, The Affair, which was like a weird mm-hmm. role, also played an American. But then I've seen him in several, like, you know, British series and movies and things. And of course he was in SAS Rogue Heroes, kind of played an M mm-hmm. style character. He was in, of course, The Crown. He played Prince Charles. I just think he's a really versatile actor. He's got a very expressive face. I think he can play very serious, very M sort of, like, down to business sort of guy, but he has this like charm to him and this sort of way of, you know, cocking an eyebrow or a half smile that I think makes him very versatile. And I think he just has the right delivery. So I think he'd be a good one. I had kind of a plan B that I thought was, this will come as a bit of a surprise, but, do you know who Indira Varma is? She's a
not offhand.
Hold British on. Actress. She was actually in Game of Thrones. She's currently on stage with Ralph Fiennes in Macbeth. She plays Lady Macbeth. I think she's the right age. I think she's. I mean, she goes way back. I remember her in Kama Sutra back in 1996, and she's been in just so many things. And I think she's a great actress. I like the kind of alternate between male and female M's. I think, you know, Judi Dench is arguably
incredible,
the best. Ralph Fiennes was great. I think if we're going to go back to a woman, I think someone like Indira Varma, she's the right age. She has this sort of commands of respect on screen. The other person I thought of was Kristin Scott Thomas as M, but I
was just going to say you can't because of Second Desk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, too close to Slow Horses, but she'd be great. And so
she's
perfect. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those were my choices for M.
Those are good picks, man. I like those a lot for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We want to do Bond Girl.
Sure.
For lack of a better term.
Yeah. Yeah. Who do you got?
So this was a really tough one for me. I ended up with three again, again, with the goal of hitting a younger audience, as culturally broad an audience as possible. We're going to go with an American.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with Maya Hawke.
Don't even know who that is.
So if you saw Stranger Things, she was one of the leads in the most recent season. She is Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's daughter.
Okay.
She's quite talented.
Yeah.
I think that would give an entirely different vibe than Léa Seydoux. And I'm a huge Léa Seydoux fan.
Yeah.
I think deep down, there's a version of me where it was just absolutely Ana de Armas as Paloma, mm-hmm. but she's already been established in a previous, and I don't think it would make sense if she was suddenly the love interest. Like, I think I would like to have her in this movie to do another sequence like the Cuba sequence from No Time to Die.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it would necessarily, in the presence of some sort of a clean slate, it was Maya Hawke was what we landed on. I thought she's great in everything I've caught her in so far. You know, you look back on some Bond women in the films and they're like somewhat forgettable or callously placed in the film one. And then you have others where it's like a much more powerful sort of position.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be cool to see, especially with what we dealt with over the Daniel Craig ones, with obviously him having a longstanding emotional connection to Ava Green's character, Vesper Lynd. And then with Léa Seydoux, like we kind of only got two very memorable Bond, three if you include M in Skyfall, but two very memorable Bond women from that kind of run. And I think either one of them could have kind of existed throughout most of the films as his foil. And I think there's an opportunity to do that and lean in a little bit less towards just the sexual dynamic,
mm-hmm.
and more towards like a relationship or even crafting this other person as an element of the plot line that's more than a damsel tied to the track sort of scenario.
Yeah. 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 That's a good call. And I think weaving the term Bond girl just troubles me, but anyway,
I was trying to find another,
it's the common term. So we'll go with it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, weaving the Bond girl into the plot as a crucial element, like mm-hmm. Paloma in No Time to Die, I think having her be sort of
some autonomy,
another some agent power, or some you know, undercover or something or other is a good choice. Mm-hmm. And for mine, I have two choices. I think both of these would be strong. I think one, the first choice is Niv Sultan. She's an Israeli actress who was in this series called Tehran, in which she actually played a spy undercover in like the Iranian nuclear program. She certainly has the looks to pull it off, but I think there's also certain sort of intelligence in her character, and certainly I've been probably colored by watching that series, which I highly recommend. I thought it was fantastic. I think there were two seasons.
Okay.
She just plays the role really well. The other choice that I was coming up with, and I think you've seen Special Ops Lioness. I think you've seen that series.
Oh yeah, of course.
The kind of the main actress besides Zoe Saldana was, I think her name is Layla de mm-hmm. Oliveira. Mm-hmm. She kind of plays the kind of the main character in that series. Yeah. And I think she would be great. She's very dynamic, very physical, very mm-hmm. kind of action-oriented, very beautiful, of course. And I think she would make a good foil for Bond as well. I think there'd be some good kind of chemistry there and kind of interplay between the two. So, yeah, those are my two picks. Yeah,
yeah. My backups were, Saoirse Ronan, I think, would be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And I also, I don't know how I feel about her in an action-central role.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Saoirse Ronan had Hannah, and I think Maya Hawke, you know, there's lots of action throughout Stranger Things and that sort of thing. But the third one that hit my radar that I really like, everything she's in, is Anya Taylor-Joy.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know necessarily how she would line up for more of an action setting. But, you know, with the right time and effort and training, I think it could work out. And she's very dynamic and fun to watch, and she can be funny, and she can be kind of aloof. And, you know, obviously this would break up the kind of American element that I was talking about in giving her but she's carried so many otherwise American roles in some films recently and TV series recently. So I think she'd be an interesting option. Those are kind of the three. I can't tell you that like I have one feeling where one would be significantly better than the other.
Yeah.
Of the three. But those are kind of the three that hit me for the quote unquote Bond girl.
Yeah. Good call. Moving on, sticking to kind of the female roles, who do you have for Moneypenny?
Emma Watson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good. Okay, good one. Yep, I can see that. Yep.
I think she can do just about anything that she wants to do. I think she'd be really exciting to see in an action role. And, you know, obviously previously in the last few films, we've seen Moneypenny enter the field and work alongside Bond.
Yeah.
In some cases, wounding Bond.
Yeah.
I think her draw is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think she must have one of the wider scopes where, like, my daughters would know her because of Harry Potter films that were made before either of them were born.
Yeah.
And someone like my father would recognize her from, again, from Harry Potter or something else. I just think she has a huge presence and I think suits that role kind of nicely.
Yeah, good one.
Would you have for Moneypenny?
This might be oddly similar to that choice, maybe. Younger, but Jodie Comer.
Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, she's incredible. That's a good pick.
I think she's a good actress. She's maybe a bit on the young side. I just noticed she's only 31, but that's okay. But I think she has this quirkiness to her, this sort of unpredictability, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe mm-hmm. it's coming from watching Killing Eve, but like just this like almost nerdy quirkiness to her that I think would work well, but there's enough of a flirtatious element that I think would fit well with kind of the usual Bond Moneypenny chemistry. So yeah, she's my pick.
That's great.
Yeah. I don't really have a second choice. I had a hard time with this one for some reason. I really liked Naomi Harris. I think she's,
me too.
You know, again, it's one of those choices where if they carried her over from one to the next, which, you know, look, there's a long history of that. Lois Maxwell played Moneypenny for a number of films. And of course we've had Samantha Bond played them throughout the Brosnan movies. So there's precedent for that. But if we're starting from scratch, I'm going to go with Jodie Comer.
Nice. I love it. Yeah. She's awesome in Killing Eve.
Yeah.
All right. So what do we have next? You want to do you want to do Q? You want to do Felix?
Yeah. Let's finish the MI6 sure. roster here with Q.
So
yeah.
Who's your Q?
Well, okay. I'll go first. Yeah. I have Q. All right. Q was tough as well, but you want sort of nerdy scientist. I was debating whether you go young or old. Just wasn't sure on this one. But one of my favorite actors who's been in so many great, great films and TV shows is Toby Jones. Of course, he was in Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, one of my favorite films. He was in The Detectorists. He was in, he's just been in so many great movies. He's played, you know, Truman Capote, et cetera. I think he's got sort of the interesting physical characteristics. He's sort of a odd looking guy that is sort of visually interesting. And I think he would, I could see him like being in the lab kind of coming up with interesting gadgets. And I think since my film is sort of a throwback piece or a period piece, I think he can slide right into kind of a 1950s role. I think he's played that role probably several times. I can picture him in sort of a tweed suit, mm-hmm. you know, or a lab coat or something like that. So yeah, Toby Jones, my second choice.
That's a fun one.
If you don't mind, I'll throw this out there. Martin Freeman.
Oh, great. Perfect.
Who is a spectacular actor. Yeah, I'm not sure he'd be great for Q. He could probably be M. I don't know, but he's really, really good. He was in Sherlock. He's been in, you know, just so many great stuff. He often plays a cop or whatever else, but like I think he'd be good as well. But Toby Jones is my first choice for Q.
I love it. That's great. Great picks. Yeah. I had a lot of trouble with Q. Because I think if you're looking for people that could fit the role, it could be like anybody that you think, like think of who's had it. Like it's a pretty wide cast of characters that have carried Q.
Yeah.
And they always get 4 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make a couple quips about how Bond destroys everything, show off a gadget or two. And then in later films, some of them are actually involved like in plot points, whether it be, you know, hacking a computer or that sort of thing.
right.
I really thought like Colin Firth would be really fun for this.
Yeah.
Especially if you had like Daniel Kaluuya, because Colin Firth is more of like a traditional Bond figure, could be in the great suit. But then it's like he did Kingsman. Does that kind of take him out of the Bond space?
Yeah.
You know, I've at least read anecdotally that the group that puts together the Bond films under the Broccoli's direction doesn't love it when they're looking at somebody and that person's doing spy movies.
Yeah.
So if not him, I really like Nicholas Holt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Might be a little bit too close to Ben Whishaw in just general sort of vibe. But I like him quite a bit and I think that could work. But I didn't have like a name that was like, this is absolutely my cue.
Yeah.
It didn't happen for me. So I think that could go. I also do love the idea of like a Simon Pegg or Nick Frost, like make a reference to another big British sort of element in the Cornetto trilogy. Yeah. But obviously like Simon Pegg is also in spy movies.
Right.
And so that can become kind of difficult as well. But there's a lot. I like the idea of it being somebody kind of funny with a bit of an edge, but also someone who has trouble interfacing like with the way that Bond, the sort of power that Bond has.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's always kind of interesting, yeah. where they see him as kind of a blunt object and he sees them as kind of a guy that gives them pens and guns.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think if you could find someone that fell into that dynamic nicely, almost anyone could work here.
Yeah.
I think this could also be a good role for you or me in the film.
Sure, I'll throw my hat in the ring, although we're not British, so I'm not sure we'd qualify. But
it'd be weird, yeah. I'm not known for my decidedly tidy English accent.
Yeah, right, right. What about CIA? What about Felix Leiter, Bond's, you know, American counterpart?
Sure. I mean, I have two names for this one, that, and I like both of them a lot, but it's definitely Ben Affleck.
Wow. I was not expecting that. Yeah. Wow.
It's Ben Affleck or it's Steve Carell.
Amazing. Okay. I was not expecting those.
Both, I think, would be, it's partially a stunt cast, but go back and watch any Steve Carell where he's not being specifically funny.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's good.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Foxcatcher.
Mm-hmm. Great.
This would get us The Office crowd.
Mm-hmm.
This would get us Late Night.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like all these worlds where Steve Carell is this beloved person for great reason.
Yeah.
But aren't always the same world that wants to go watch a James Bond film.
Yeah.
And I think if you had him in a semi, like as Felix,
mm-hmm.
I think that would be fascinating. And I think where Steve Carell would go kind of one direction, Ben Affleck brings this brick wall of intimidation to a role and he is so deeply one of my most favorite actors. I think it would, and you could almost instantly drop into action sequences with, say, Kaluuya and Affleck. You know, Ben's done a ton of action films.
That's a wild choice. That is just totally out of left field. I did not expect that. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we haven't gotten to director. You could put his name in there.
Sure.
Too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But so who do you have for Felix? Who's your Felix?
Yeah, I think mine might be equally unpredictable. Going back to a TV series that I just mentioned, I'm going to go with Zoe Saldana as Felix.
Okay.
She kind of plays that in Lioness Special Ops. I think she's has a seriousness to her that, you know, Felix, I think he's kind of a happy-go-lucky sidekick in some films, but I think this would introduce a bit more of a raw kind of serious tone. Like, this is a serious operator. This is some, like, you know, like you mentioned with Affleck, like, I think she could do action stuff. I think she,
mm-hmm. Oh, she definitely can. Yeah. Yeah.
She wouldn't put up with Bond's kind of, you know, flirtations and this and that. I think introducing a female character, maybe even with the name Felix, I think would be kind of a fun twist.
Yeah. I agree.
Kind of present her as you know, he gets introduced to this CIA person at, you know, at the airport, who happens to kind of like in Dr. No, when he first meets Felix, and you know, I think that would be kind of a neat opening kind of barrage when they meet each other, to kind of introduce Zoe Saldana as Felix. I'm not sure that, you know, given my concept for the film being a period piece, I'm not sure, you know, having a black woman as a CIA agent in the 1950s would definitely fly, but, you know, who cares? We're bending rules here. So I think she'd be great.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, no, I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Lioness, which is another of the Taylor Sheridan programs, just did its first season last year, really good kind of spec ops drama.
Yeah.
And she's incredible in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really great. All right. What else we got here? We got
the good guys.
Yeah. You want to do some bad guys?
We got to do the bad guys. Yeah. Who's your villain?
Let's see. Okay, so this one's I'm gonna lose some. I'm gonna divide the crowd a bit with this
one.
It's Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's literally just starting a sort of comeback. He's cleaned up his act. He's apparently sober and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you want to speak to somebody, if you want to pull at the pop culture heartstrings of somebody my age, maybe a little older, a little younger, around my age, it's Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
He was in a ton of stuff. He was going to be the next big guy. He clearly had some struggles being a child actor, the rest of it. Not the purview of this show to get into that kind of thing. But I love the idea of a younger Bond bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought Remy Malek was great.
Yeah.
But I think that where Remy Malek needed the somewhat sort of... like, Remy Malek's character hit me as a little bit of a bit, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like he had some things he had to be doing to sell the overall character.
Yeah, yeah,
I think that Shia LaBeouf could just be menacing.
Mm-hmm.
He has a crazy element, and I think with the right henchmen, and you're not ready for my two henchmen.
Oh boy,
because in my mind, this is a a bond that circles around the world of West Coast tech culture.
Ah, okay. All right. Yeah.
And seasteading. And so if you imagine Shia LaBeouf somehow playing like a movie bad guy version of somebody I already feel isn't necessarily the nicest dude, Peter Thiel, that sort of vibe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just a Mark Zuckerberg, but sure. Totally evil.
Yeah, yeah.
With an unlimited amount of money, a huge control of data, and then, you know, maybe they're trying to steal an atomic clock so they can change the timing of the Bitcoin chain. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't figured out that much.
Yeah.
But that's, and I think him at the lead of that, maybe with a weird haircut, would really go a long way. And I think that it would call in a certain, crowd that would never go to a Bond movie.
Oh, that's good. I like it. I have to admit, I'm looking through his list of movies that he's been in. I don't know that I've ever seen him in a film. I know who he is. I'm very aware of him, but I mean, I'm sure I've seen some of these movies.
I grew up with Even Stevens and Holes.
Yep. Nope.
And Disturbia is like a remake of Rear Window, sort of.
All right.
He's had a tough career, but I think like if you wanted to try something,
yeah,
he's not a safe choice by any stretch.
Yeah.
But I think it would be genuinely interesting, and I have no doubts that he could deliver a bad guy.
Yeah, 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 I can see it, yeah.
All right. So should I do my henchman, or do you want to give me your bad guy?
Oh, you're on a roll. Go with your henchman.
All right, so henchman one is, I got to have him. Mm-hmm. There's no way I can do a movie without him. Mm-hmm. It's John Barenthal.
John Barenthal, all right. Running to Google here.
I just adore him. He's in so many movies and so many roles that I adore. He can play a nicer guy.
Great
but
choice.
Man, can he play
a
terrifying, mean dude that's coming for you.
Yep.
I love John Barenthal.
Yeah.
Just absolutely adore him. And so, yeah, that'd be Henchman 1.
Good call.
And then Henchman 2, this is a bit of a stunt pick, but I like it, and I guarantee he could do it. You got to go back and watch Baby Driver.
Yeah.
Or take some of the angrier moments from The Town. It's John Hamm.
Oh.
So got John Barenthal and John Hamm.
As a henchman. Really?
Two, okay. You know, 6'2", just mean-looking guys. Give them, again, a weird haircut goes a long way.
Yeah.
Maybe a distinctive weapon. Like one of them only uses, I don't know, a diamond-studded knuckle duster.
Yeah.
Right? Like maybe Barenthal's got a real flashy bit of metal in hand. And I see them also figuring out some way for them to kind of work together.
Yeah.
On something. Yeah. Like maybe tactically they have a history together, so they can do things without where normal people would have to communicate
or
they operate like one person. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But that's it. I mean, it's a wild crew, the bad guys in this one. It's Shia LaBeouf, John Barenthal, and John Hamm.
Those are odd choices. That's a weird bunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good though. It's good. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I don't know. I think it could come together. Again, you have to go back and like watch the reference material for all these ideas. Like go back and watch John Hamm and Baby Driver. And I think he just has like a Bond henchman sort of vibe.
Yeah.
And he can also do any side of it. Like you want him to be a little bit funny. The guy does 5% funny as good as anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whether it's a 30 Rock cameo or you know, a throwaway line as Don Draper.
Yeah.
And then Barenthal, I think Barenthal's the easiest yes of the three.
Yeah.
He just is like he has henchman energy. It's great.
Yeah, good call. I think unpredictability is actually effective when it comes to casting movies like this. I think you put put someone, especially in the bad guy role, and it's like, what? I can't see him as that. And then like if they pull it off.
Christopher Walken in the past.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, they're not always these conventional sort of, you know, just like bad versions of James Bond. They kind of have to be their own thing. And like Shia LaBeouf couldn't be James Bond, but I do think he could be a Bond bad guy.
All right. I went with this is probably the most predictable choice for a Bond villain. But I have a second choice that I think you're going to like. But my first choice just popped in my head like immediately is Cillian Murphy.
Oh yeah. Be killer.
I mean, like you just look at the guy. Like he has that stone cold look, and I just think he'd be, and the eyes, you know, and he's certainly played some villainous characters in the past, so I think he could pull it off. I think he has that sort of mastermind sort of evil in him to pull that role off, even though when I've heard him in interviews he sounds like a really sweet person, but
he definitely does.
I think he'd be great, and he's such a tremendous actor. And I think, you know, following up on Rami Malek, I think, you know, to bring in somebody that everybody thinks would be great, or like Christoph Waltz. I mean, they bring in these great actors that have this menace to them, and I think they always pull it off. My second choice is a guy, you might not know him by name, but you've certainly seen him, Alfie Allen. And I'm pulling really strongly from SAS Rogue Heroes. I realize I've even got another choice from this as well.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, this guy has bad guy energy.
But
sure.
He was in bad guy energy. I love it.
No, he's great.
He was in Game of Thrones.
I mean, he's the son in John Wick.
Yes.
In the first John Wick.
Yeah. John Wick, Game of Thrones. He wasn't a bad guy in SAS Rogue Heroes, but like he just has this like quirky look and he can just deliver. So he might be better. He could also be a good henchman. So, you know, if he's my second choice for villain, maybe he's a henchman as well. But I'm going to go with Cillian Murphy. Let's put Alfie Allen as a henchman. I'm going to demote him to henchman. But in terms of henchmen, I had two other choices, and one was, this was hard for me because, you know, I think you kind of nailed it with your picks, but I don't follow boxing, but recently there was this big fight that everyone was talking about, and Tyson Fury, I think, would make a good henchman. He's this British heavyweight champion. And I think to have somebody like Dave Bautista, who played the henchman, I mean, you know, like pull a guy from, you know, the pro wrestling circuit or a pro boxer and put him in that role. You know, he's big, he's strong, like he's, you know, you just don't want to meet that guy in a dark alley. And then the other one was actually a woman, so henchwoman, I guess, Sophia Boutella, I believe she's Algerian. She was also in SAS Rogue Heroes. Sorry to keep harping on that movie, but she was also in Kingsman and Atomic Blonde.
One or two of the Star Trek, the more recent Star Trek films. She's great.
She has a certain look about her, and I believe she is fluent in the martial arts, if not gymnastics or something. She does a lot of action sequences. And I think she'd be really good. So
I love it.
I guess I've got three hench people if you throw Alfie Allen in there. But Alfie Allen could replace one of these two, Tyson Fury or Sophia Boutella. Anyway, we got a good crop of baddies in this film.
Yeah. I mean, the main bad guy, I almost figured like it makes sense to go like with somebody kind of conventional, like more so a Cillian Murphy than a Shia LaBeouf, for example.
Yeah.
But I didn't come across someone who I was like, yeah, because like I don't know if you'd give the whole thing to Barenthal. He's not that big a name,
right?
Like it would be cool for somebody like me, but like even in a film like like Sicario, he's like a secondary bad guy,
And I mean,
speaking of that, has Daniel Kaluuya and actually two or three other names that I would like are in there. The Bond thing, there's a lot of weight to picking a Bond. Whereas like a bad guy, he's going to get one film, right?
Right.
And
right,
I think I want somebody that's nothing like Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
Le Chiffre was just tonally perfect.
Perfect. Absolutely. Possibly the best.
I couldn't stop watching Mikkelsen in that role. There's not one scene where he's on screen that I would think about skipping.
Yeah. No, he's the best.
He's just amazing. It's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Do what he does in that. And then the same thing with Javier Bardem. Obviously, guy plays a bad guy really well.
Yeah.
He does so in some of my most favorite films. But yeah, I think it's interesting for me because in my mind, it could have been Brolin. I love Brolin. I want an excuse to have Josh Brolin in a film.
Yeah.
But he played the Marvel guy, the purple dude.
Oh, yeah, right.
Who's like a bad... He's the main bad guy for a bunch of those movies, I think. Yeah. And those aren't my speed, those movies, to be fair. So, but I think he played like the guy with the glove that kills half of everybody. So that kind of left him out. And I'm not like 100% sold on Shia LaBeouf. I think it could be amazing, but I think you'd be taking a real risk with that, like giving him that much. And maybe it's him with a smaller role or whatever. I'm not sure. But
yeah.
I think some of these... we can get to director next, or maybe we do theme and car. I don't know. I think some of my picks will make a little bit more sense when I tell you the director.
Okay.
Because I think it aligns with some of these kind of somewhat weirder takes, and we'll kind of outline the tone the film will probably take.
Well, let's jump into that. I'm curious now. Who's your director?
So this is tough because obviously there's a bunch of incredible directors right now, but I wanted a Bond that felt different.
Yeah.
Right. So I'd like to keep, I'm going to do cinematography at the same time. So I'd like to keep Deakins.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
To shoot it.
Yeah.
I just think he's done, there are single frames of Skyfall that I would absolutely print and hang on a wall.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for my director, we're not going Mendez. We're not going Villeneuve. I don't want a dark Bond, but I want a really raw Bond.
Okay.
For a brand new one. Yeah. And I'm going with one of my favorites, Jeremy Saulnier, who directed with The Green Room, which we've talked about before on a film club, and he also directed a fantastic film with Macon Blair called Blue Ruin, which I believe won Palme d'Or.
Okay.
And back when it came out, if you know, if you've seen Green Room, if you don't like really violent films, troubling films, the rest of it, skip Green Room. Don't take my suggestion on this one. But if you like a violent film, Green Room is about a band, like a Portland area punk band,
yeah,
that takes a cheap show out in the woods. And when they get out into the woods for the show, they find out that it's like a neo-Nazi camp.
Oh, wow.
Bar scenario.
Oh, okay.
And while they're there, they just decide to antagonize the neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
And then something happens, all hell breaks loose. Wow. The like main Nazi, Patrick Stewart,
holy
and Macon
cow.
Blair plays like the captain. The movie is totally unhinged,
huh?
Incredibly violent.
Wow,
great casting. The now late Anton Yelchin, Alia Shawkat, who's, if you watched Arrested Development, she's a maybe. Is great in it.
Yeah.
The casting's great. It's really scary. It's really tense. I don't think it's the totality of the tone of a Bond film at all.
Yeah.
But I would love it that, like, when the dial hits 11, it hits 11 like Green Room.
Yeah.
Less so than, say, a Mendez film.
Sure.
So, yeah, Jeremy Saulnier and Roger Deakins.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm for mine, because I'm doing a period piece, and there are two films that I absolutely adore that this guy's done. I am going with Thomas Alfredson as director. Mm-hmm. So he did Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is a film I've seen about 20 times. Absolutely love. Again, like Skyfall, it's like there's just not a bad frame in that movie.
It's gorgeous.
Beautifully absolutely shot. Gorgeous. His director of photography was Hoyte van Hoytema, who I believe did one of the Bond films as well. And he's worked on some great stuff. But Alfredson did Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. But then, of course, he did Let the Right One In, which is part of our film club, that weird, spooky mm-hmm. Scandinavian vampire film.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could do a period piece. I think, look, if you honestly,
he did Dunkirk and Oppenheimer.
Yeah. And if you took Tinker Tailor and you kind of made that, morphed it into a Bond film, like, I'd be very happy. Like put these actors that I've got in a film by Alfredson
mm-hmm.
with Van Hoytema as the cinematographer. I'd be very happy. Yeah, so it'd be a fantastic movie. So
for those of you screaming at your car dashboard, Hoytema shot Spectre.
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah. But also, just follow this. Oppenheimer, we're going backwards-ish. Oppenheimer, Dunkirk, Nope, which is Daniel Kaluuya, Tenet, Interstellar, Ad Astra, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Her, Spectre, The Fighter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
good.
Top of the game.
People. Yeah.
Absolute top of the game. Yeah. Nope is an incredibly beautiful film.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about theme song? I mean, you got to have a good theme song. Not don't sing it for us, or don't name the song, but who's going to do it?
So I like it when it's when you've got like more than one, like it's a featuring for James Bond. Like, you know, we had the year it was Chris Cornell and was it Alicia Keys maybe?
No, that was with Jack White and Alicia Keys. They did
Jack White and Alicia Keys. Thank you. So for me, this, I'm going with James Blake.
Wow.
Would be the lead to write it. I mean, it's just perfect in my mind, especially if you've done a Sam Smith, we can easily do a James Blake. I think this will be incredible and could be going in many like very unexpected ways. And then I think the feature on the song, Hannah Reid from London Grammar.
Oh, yeah.
And good. I think it'd be perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could get her vocals on a track with him and they could sing, you know, elements of it together. But I think I like a Bond theme song with a female vocal.
Yeah.
But I think the two of them represent huge British talent in the space. I think people are only starting to come to terms with just kind of how prolific Blake may be if given the time and the connections.
Yeah.
And I've just been a huge fan. And then London Grammar. I mean, they're just top of my list for bands I haven't seen live yet. And I think she's
great voice.
Incredible.
Great voice.
And would be so fun to have crank out that song, and then you could see them like performing it at the Oscars or whatever it may be. Could be really fun.
Yeah. Good one. My knee-jerk reaction for theme song was I feel like it was a missed opportunity when Radiohead's version of the Spectre theme did not make it to the movie. Radiohead actually wrote a song for the Spectre theme, and it's out there and you can listen to it, and it's a tremendous song, and I just love Radiohead. So I want to bring them back. I want to have Radiohead do the song, but I like your idea of featuring someone. And I feel like if we're looking at sort of a commercial element to this, and you want to bring in somebody who's popular with the current generation and kind of the moment. Mm-hmm. Radiohead featuring Dua Lipa.
Okay.
Or written by, you know, Tom York from Radiohead and Dua Lipa sings it. I think she has a good, strong voice. I think she could kind of carry that Adele energy.
Okay.
Maybe not her usual kind of music, but I think she's got a good voice for it. And then, you know, whether she performs it with Radiohead or Radiohead writes it or something, but that's my pick.
All right. Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot.
I thought for sure you'd pick Lana Del Rey.
No. I think it's another one where it's cool if it's like a Brit.
Yeah.
They have such a musical identity to their, like the pop culture scene in England has always been tied to.
Yeah.
It's just one cliche after another. The Beatles.
Yeah.
Pink Floyd.
Yeah, right.
Led Zeppelin. Right.
Yeah.
Elton John.
Yeah, true.
Like we could literally, like the Queen. I could go forever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's cool to have it be somebody that's like kind of part of the musical scene in that space at the time. And obviously they've gone other directions, like we mentioned, Jack White and Alicia Keys and Chris Cornell and that sort of thing. So I mean that's just the kind of the first spot for me. But yeah, huge fan of James Blake, and then London Grammar is awesome. So I think that could work really well.
Yeah.
Radiohead, and I don't know one Dua Lipa song, but I'm sure my daughters would remind me of some that I've heard. Not an area of the music world that I keep up with very, very cleanly, but I love the idea of a Radiohead.
Yeah,
and like, would the song also be in like a 50s style?
Not necessarily. I think they could do it timelessly. You know, some strings, sure. Maybe a little bit of brass.
I mean, the whole world is just going to be fighting to catch up with Adele.
Yeah, and
arguably Billie Eilish from the last couple ones.
Yeah,
they're just the themes are so catchy. Every time you hear them,
oh, they're tremendous.
They're so much fun.
Yeah,
that one from Adele is incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so what do we got left?
Car.
Mm.
What do you got?
You're going to be yours is of the moment, 50s.
Right? Yeah, 50s.
Yeah, mine's of the moment. I want whatever the most cutting edge Aston possible is, like whatever's available in a year or two, some electric DBS with 1200 horsepower, whatever. I want that in the film.
Yeah.
But Cluia doesn't drive it.
Oh, okay.
Like I want to like almost like set up a whole sequence where he keeps getting close to driving a poster car.
Yeah.
But always ends up driving something kind of terrible.
Yeah.
So like, you know, maybe he's trying to get to the Aston because it has the weapons and the oil slicks and the smoke and the rest. But the best he can do is a Vespa.
Yeah.
A dirt bike that he takes, you know, picks up off the ground. Like just like keep it a little bit more dynamic. Like I think my movie would have a car chase sequence. I just think it'd be fine if that didn't involve Bond directly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like if one of these other people I've listed.
Right.
You know, and I think the bad guys will be in Ineos Grenadiers.
Ah, good call. Yeah.
I think that's fun and would look cool, and you could kit them up really crazy like they've done with the last of those V8 Rovers with the ropes on them from the previous one and that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, I think the other thing that comes to mind is I love the idea of like some sort of unconventional conveyance.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's an ultralight airplane or some sort of weird rocket that gets Bond to the other side of the world very quickly, or I'd come up with something kind of like avant-garde.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't count as a car, but it would be some sort of mode of transport for Bond, just because they move around so much. And it's not like you see him sitting at the front of a British Airways flight, like declining about, the cheap champagne.
Right, right.
Some explanation of how they get around would be kind of cool. But
yeah,
I mean, at some point it would have to be an Aston because it's Bond. I think it kind of has to be.
Yeah.
And they've also already sort of done, not sort of, like with the final few Craig films, they did the DB5 thing pretty strongly.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I needed to pick one that I think Kaluuya could drive in this film, even for a car chase or the rest of it, it would be the Aston Martin Valor. Which is a modernized take on the V8 Vantage from the 70s.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
But it's a V12 based in a DBS, but it has a stick.
Okay. Nice.
Just the coolest thing they've made in some time. And I think there's a Bondness to it for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we had a Monaco sequence or if we had you know, pulling up to Casino Square, sort of, it would be in something like this with a big flip of the throttle and,
oh, that thing's gorgeous.
Sort of thing. And then maybe,
oh, man.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible looking car for sure.
Beautiful, beautiful thing.
But yeah, what do you have for your car?
Yeah, I mean, my film's set in the 50s and certainly a heyday for British cars. And the predictable choice would be like an Aston DB2, which was, you know, predecessor mm-hmm. to the DB5. You know, beautiful, beautiful car. But I thought to take on a little something a little bit different, but equally elegant, but also sporty. You know, Jag had some gorgeous cars those days, and I was kind of looking around at 50s Jags, and I think an XK140 fixed head coupe, I guess, the FHC,
okay,
would be pretty spectacular. I mean, just a beautiful low slung, you know, long haunches at the front, beautiful grill. You know, just a fast car for its day. I think if we're setting it in the 50s, I think, you know, an XK140 or something like a DB2, I think would be pretty amazing. You know, a lot of choices in the 50s, but yeah.
You'd have the opportunity to put Bond in like a DVR1.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something else. But I mean, it's also something else in the same way as a C or a D type Aston, Jag.
Yeah, like, yeah.
They have that vibe.
Right, right.
And yeah. I guess 50s Bond, you could also make the case for vintage Bentley.
Which in the books he drove, and yeah. And I was thinking about Bentleys as well, and I guess if we're trying to get back to as close as possible to kind of 50s books, Fleming books, you know, a Bentley would be a good choice as well. But I don't know, I'm kind of bewitched by the XK140, and I think it'd make a good pick for him. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can also like do the Bentley thing, like he could be picked up from the airport.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in a classic Bentley.
I like
still,
that.
And still get it done. And like 50s Bentley was essentially like fairly hardcore race cars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, two block long sedans.
Right. Right.
I think that could be super cool. And I think Jag works as well as Aston. And if you're going back in time and that kind of thing, like a DB2 is pretty cool too, though.
Yeah.
A lot of cool cars in the 50s, especially from the like British perspective post-war.
Yeah. Any gadgets spring to mind for your film? Gadgets are tough.
Well, like I said, I want something where like, what was the thing from the Batman movie, like that skyhook?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Immediately transported it, like something to that extent, like a bit of a gimmick, I want it to have a bit of a gimmick. It also, I want like a set piece, kind of like what you get in the, you know, the most recent versions of Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
like whether it's some crazy skydiving or whatever. So probably something like an ultralight spy plane, you know, that flies way, way up high, and you can get like a cool sequence out of that. I definitely love the idea of having a sequence with Q and he gets a gadget. But then for my Bond, like one, I want him to be like considered fresh in the agency.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chance for the audience to also kind of start at the ground floor.
Yeah.
With Bond.
Yeah.
And I think part of that would be like he would get the pen that could also be a grenade and he breaks it or it doesn't work when he goes to use it.
Oh, sure.
You know, like I liked that in Skyfall when, you know, that famous sequence in Macau where they're at the casino and the guy tries to use his gun and can't because of the hand registration.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like those. That's like just enough of an interesting element to be like, oh, okay, like there it is.
Right.
But I don't think in my world, I don't think we're returning to like a heavily gadgeted Bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would probably follow loosely in the same footsteps as Daniel Craig and just kind of have them have a few cool things. But I think it'd be kind of funny to have him think that he's going to be able to rely on a laser cutting pen or something and then have it just not work and have to kick the door in or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or use the pen to stab somebody or something instead.
Exactly. Yeah. Like when it doesn't work, it goes right in some guy's throat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I think that's kind of the scope on the gadgets. I think there's some fun stuff out there. I love the idea that's established in Kim Sherwood's two novels that are out of like how Dryden essentially has like a neural link.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it allows for storytelling that's not possible while somebody's having a cell phone call.
Right, right.
Like they're able to know so much about his physiology. And obviously previously we saw Bond get like a smart blood implant.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't be stealing this directly. I mean, I think Kim did an amazing job with it. And Dryden's a really fascinating character because he has this other layer of interface that makes him somehow like somewhat less human in some ways and more connected. But less of a Bond.
Yeah.
It's like a very clever way of like differentiating from one 00 to another.
Yeah.
Is giving them an entirely different talent set. And I like the idea of like a little thing that Bond puts in his ear or that they put in his arm, and it just removes some of the barriers for certain things that you could try and do in the story.
Yeah.
Where it wouldn't need exposition. They could just know certain things.
Right.
They already know his dad, like where he is and that kind of thing. But I think some of this of like Bond with the ability to have some level of AR. So when he's running around in a building at night, he can see the stairways. He can see the elevator shafts. He knows where the power and
sure.
the water is
and
all this kind of stuff. And if it gave him just this ability to like take out 20 guys because he's like a ninja because he has this other level of technology, I think that could be cool. And it could be shown in a way that would feel tactical and not too gimmicky. But, you know, I could also just go even more towards Craig and just skip all of it. How about you?
Yeah, I didn't have much in the way of gadgets, and especially since this is the 50s, I have to like recalibrate my brain for like old, you know, old technology. And the best thing I came up with was like, this is classic Bond. He's going to be wearing suits. I thought, let's give him a bulletproof Savile Row tailored suit, like a 3-piece suit.
Oh, yeah.
That is, it wouldn't be Kevlar, I'm guessing, back then, whatever, you know, some sort of state of the art bulletproof something. So he wears this suit, and then, of course, it saves his life because the waistcoat is made from some impenetrable material. So maybe a bit of a phoned in one, but you know, that's what I came up with, and I thought it would be kind of fitting for that era.
I agree. Yeah, and I think like maybe like a cool radio, like picnic radio that has a weapon in it, or
yeah,
you know, like just because the electronics were so cool in the 50s aesthetically.
Yeah,
could be kind of fun. So we only left one on the board, and to be fair, I actually forgot to write it down immediately, but what's the watch? What's your Bond watch?
50s, early Rolex days. I guess it depends on where I'm placing it in the 50s. Early 50s. All right, you know, I'm going to go back to kind of the arguably the Fleming Bond watch, which would have been either like an Oyster Perpetual or an Explorer. You know, both, you know, we're talking 53, 54 era. Maybe it's slightly later in the 50s. If you go to 57, you could do like an early Seamaster 300, kind of the earliest series of those. But yeah, I'm going to be predictable. I'm going to go with a Rolex, but not the dive watch. I think I'm going to give him, you know, the field watch associated one. GMT is tempting, I guess, but I don't see Bond in a GMT. So I think something simple. I think an Explorer, early Explorer.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
I was really tempted to go a few different ways, but I do genuinely love that he wears an Omega. I think for Bond to switch from Omega to Rolex now would actually be a bummer. I can try and unpack that at some point in the future, but we are at like an hour and a half, so I probably don't need to do 20 minutes on if he switched, he would need to switch like to a CWC or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Something that made like direct sense. But I think Omega aligns with the world that Bond operates in, all this sort of thing, but it would be a brand new watch.
Yeah.
There's not a current Omega that I think Bond should be wearing.
Oh, sure.
And I think for me, it's Omega essentially brings back the 2254, or if you go back to like 70 Seamaster,
yeah,
so the 166024 or similar. I mean, we're talking about as beautiful as a dive watch ever got.
Yeah,
simply fully make a clone of that in modern materials, do it in titanium if you want. I wouldn't necessarily be that picky,
right?
But just this watch, this is the only watch he wears throughout the film. There's not it's not a three watch scenario or whatever.
Yeah.
I also think the other option would be to just simply have Kaluuya in a vintage Omega.
Yeah.
Which I think could be really cool. Maybe you assign some sort of a backstory to it. Maybe turns down a modern something or other from Q and says, I got that. We're sorted.
Yeah.
And they just keep going.
Yeah.
I think that could be really fun. But that for me, that's the Omega sport watch. I know that it's probably the Speedmaster for most of the world.
Right.
But the classic 300 sword hands, big markers, MOD styling.
Yeah.
I think that's a very Bond thing, as are its roots to the mid-late 60s.
Yeah.
And so that would be my direction, would be some sort of a new but very faithful recreation of you know, one of the classic Seamaster 300s, like the 166024.
Good call. I think that takes us home. I think we've got all bases covered. You know, at some point, I guess we'd have to write the plot and all that, but that's a whole different animal.
That comes later. We got to get some money first.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
All right, well, let's jump into some final notes. This has been a nice long episode. You want to go first?
Yeah, sure. This one, I was aware of it, but it came, I guess, largely in thanks to our buddy J.R. Seeger, who wrote us and suggested that we start following this YouTube account called Hero Era Rally. And they've been putting up a series of videos, kind of daily highlights, if you will, from the big Peking to Paris rally from this year, which I think is just such a cool event and something I would love to do someday. You know, this is taking old cars, you know, across the deserts in Mongolia, et cetera, as the name suggests. I believe it's, you know, called Beijing these days, but Beijing to Paris, I'm not sure their exact route, but this is a grueling event for drivers and for cars. And there's just some wild, wild vehicles involved in this thing. And these video highlights are just really fun to see. So thanks to JR for sending over that link. And it's just cool stuff. And I believe we know a couple of people that are doing this or have done it. I believe Nick English is in process of doing the event right now. And
oh, very cool.
I know that Nick Sullivan, our chum from Esquire, has done it in the past in an old Bentley. And he might even be doing it this time around.
Oh, nice. But,
yeah, just a cool thing. So check it out.
Very cool. Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much for that one, JR. Always appreciate seeing a link from you hit the inbox. Mine this week is actually just a loop back on the bag that I spoke about previously that I tried to buy off of one of our Slack buddies, Adam. And I did buy it. It just didn't arrive in time for my trip to Switzerland. but I've been using it for the last week, and I'm genuinely impressed. I think for the price point...
This is cool.
It's a nice enough looking thing. It's $140 for the 6-liter sling. I used it all weekend at the cottage. I went. It has this very unconventional way of storing a laptop, where the back of the bag zippers open and a little like half sleeve slides out of the bottom, and you just jam. And technically, you're supposed to put your laptop in a case and then put it in this.
Yeah.
But I went to have a coffee on a patio in Newmarket a couple last week before we went to the cottage. And just took that with me, and I've got the SL2 in there. It can do the SL2 of the 24-70 with a bit of a space for like one of the smaller M lenses, and then you can add an entire laptop. It's got a spot where you can put in a water bottle or a tripod, like a little sleeve underneath the bag. It's just really clever and easy to use. It fits nicely. I think.
Oh, I love this.
I think if you really wanted to carry even the amount that I'm talking about right now, you might want to consider the 9-liter, the slightly larger one. But the 6 is like minimum for me. It can't be any smaller than this and still carry the SL2 and that giant lens. That said, like if you went back to my previous setup with a Q and the M10 with a lens, it would carry both of those. No sweat. So yeah, it's $140. I do not have any relationship or communications with Wandered. I don't know them super well, but I bought this off of the Slack, and shout out Adam for hooking me up with that. And I'm really, really enjoying it. It's a really handy thing to put a few items in and head out. It's quite comfortable. I got it in black. That's what Adam had. And it's a nice kind of subdued, simple, kind of made out of that semi-shiny, like bike messenger-y sort of material. Yeah. It's nice.
I love it.
So check it out if you're in the market for yet another bag. I wasn't, and yet I have one. So there you are. My self-control.
Yeah, we love our bags. Yeah. Well, that was a fun episode. I hope everyone liked it. Definitely chime in, folks, on Slack, on the comments. You know, what do you think? Are we on base here? Are we way off? What are your choices? This is one of those endlessly fascinating discussions that everybody can take part in. So
totally.
Yeah, really fun.
Well, yeah, thanks very much for that one. And as always, thank you to all of you for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, maybe even grab yourself a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music Throughout a Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote, which seemed kind of fitting for Fleming or Bond, but it's from Seneca. "He who fears death will never do anything worthy of a man who is alive."